the most important meal of the day, second breakfast.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to another Second Breakfast podcast. I'm Andy Roth alongside Phil Duvall. Say hi, Phil.
Hi, everybody.
And it's Tuesday. Yep. So something that we do on not every Tuesday, but on several Tuesdays, and we will
continue. The occasional Tuesday.
The occasional Tuesday. I am a horror movie fan.
You really are.
Yeah, pretty undeniably. And I certainly haven't seen all of them that are out there that I want to see or need to see or should see, blah, blah, blah. But I've seen a goodly percentage. Everything I just said is not true for Phil.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
Yes. So, but strangely, for some, frankly, unknown reason, and maybe we can explore that either today or in the coming weeks, he wants that to change, or he thinks that this might be the year that it changes.
Okay, so here's the thing.
Yeah.
I think horror movie is my least favorite genre right after turn of the 20th century American period pieces. I just... Like Mrs. Sofel, for instance. But like, if a movie set in the like 1890s/1900s in the United States of America, I just feel like nothing good happened in America for like a 15-year stretch. And somehow everything that did happen was boring. I don't know how, but it's just like everything that happened was... And by the way, if you have grandparents or great-grandparents that were born then, I'm sorry. Their lives were really boring at that point. It's not my fault.
Sure.
Every time I see a movie in that era, I'm like, God, everything was terrible. Like, it seemed like it was like late enough that people started to industrialize, but not early enough that they got any of the benefits of industrialization.
Yes.
Like, there's no efficiency, just all ugliness.
And right. It's kind of it's the American version of a Dickens novel.
That's actually like, I was just about thinking, like, as I said that out loud, I was thinking to myself, Dickens. And then you articulated it beautifully. Just while the word Dickens was floating in my head, you articulated it.
Happy to
help. Dickensian, I guess. Okay. Horror movies, I don't know, man, like gore. And I don't like to be scared. And the main reason is I'm a big wuss.
Okay.
Just a, let me put it this way. When I was in junior high and part of high school, my best friends, all of them,
mm-hmm.
except for one who was not. Well, I was going to say who was gay, but that's a whole other story. My best friends were skaters.
Okay.
And I realize it sounded dumb because the gay guy could have been a skater too. He wasn't.
It's true.
He liked Madonna and all the things that, like, he was very stereotypically gay and in the closet, and it was fascinating. But my best friends were skaters.
Okay.
I did not skateboard. My older brothers were skaters. At one point when I was younger, we had a half pipe built in our backyard.
Nice.
I am not kidding.
Nice.
Did I ever skateboard? No. You know why? I was scared of getting hurt.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't scared of dying. Wasn't scared of a concussion. Scared of getting hurt.
Sure.
That's all. I'm a big wuss. I don't go to horror movies because they're scary. But in the past couple of years, every once in a while I'll see a trailer and I'm like, I kind of want to see that.
Sure.
Orphan was an example of that.
Yes.
Drag Me to Hell was another example of that.
Yes.
Evil Dead was another example of that.
Mm-hmm.
Mama, which I haven't seen, but and I think this year we've started this movie podcast, which I have upped my movie watching, which was not a good idea for my soul. And we'll be talking a lot of these horror movies, and I'm like, oh, I should totally see that. So, yeah. Horror is bumping up now. I think it's not only higher up on my list than turn of the century period dramas in the United States of America, it might actually be like higher than 1960s American version of new wave period pieces. Well, not period pieces, like movies made in the 1960s by Americans that are meant to be clever.
Nice. Very briefly, Mama, not amazing. Definitely worth your time, though. Mostly because it's yet another brick in the Jessica Chastain can do literally anything wall.
Right.
So basically, to sum up, I am taking Phil to horror school. And last class, I had him watch a Spanish horror movie called Rec, as in record or recordar. And it is abjectly terrifying. It is just a flat-out terrifying movie.
Yeah.
So I decided to give him a bit of a respite, if you will, but It's not my intention to ever show him bad movies, although frankly, Phil, we've discussed this, but if you're going to watch important horror movies, there are a lot of important horror movies that frankly aren't very good as, you know, movies. C'est la vie, you know.
What? I think this is an interesting yeah. aspect of the genre for me as well. Sure. Like, oh, that's a really important horror movie. Was it good? Oh, Lord, no. Mm-hmm. What? Like, you wouldn't say that about drama.
You're right. You're right.
You might say that about some comedies, but...
Also true.
But...
But I wanted to give him a respite in terms of the, if nothing else, in terms of the abject, terrifying nature. Although I do think this movie has some scares in it. But,
oh, yeah.
So what I had him watch for today, and I watched it myself to bone up, as it were, was the 1981 horror comedy by John Landis, An American Werewolf in London.
Yeah.
Yeah. Go. Thoughts? Or do you want to give us a thoughts synopsis?
So there are two hitchhikers, American hitchhikers, probably just out of college or just in college. Mm-hmm. And they are hitchhiking. It starts with them hitchhiking in Northern England, and they're on their way to Rome eventually. Yes. How they started in Northern England, God knows. Right. But they're in Northern England. They are in Northern England. They come upon this little town. And, I won't get into the town, but they come across a little town with a secret.
Mm.
And it turns out that secret is that they know there's a werewolf around their town.
Mm-hmm.
These two guys are hitchhiking past the town. They go into what's called the moors, which is the marshy area. During a full moon, a werewolf attacks one of them, kills him, which is a shame because Griffin Dunne should be in more of everything, by the way. It's Griffin Dunne, and I love Griffin Dunne, and I love him in this movie.
Indeed.
I love him in this movie.
He's wonderful.
He is hilarious.
Yes.
Gets mauled to death and killed by this werewolf, and then the werewolf turns to kill the other guy, mm-hmm. bites him,
mm-hmm.
Is about to maul him, and gets killed by the townspeople.
Bites and scratches him. Yep.
Killed by the townspeople. Our protagonist wakes up in a London hospital. He's having crazy dreams. He's acting really weird. He ends up having a vision of his dead friend who tells him, "You've been bitten by the werewolf. You're a werewolf. I'm cursed as the undead to walk the earth until the last werewolf in this bloodline dies."
Right, until the bloodline is separate.
And hint, that's you. You have to kill yourself.
Right.
The rest of the movie is him alternately discovering that he is a werewolf, falling in love with his nurse. Wow. His nurse falling in love with him. Yowza.
Double wow. Yeah.
Him turning into a werewolf. I keep up almost saying vampire. Turning into a werewolf. There's not a lot of werewolf movies out there.
That's true.
Right. Turning into a werewolf. And just what happens with that. Oh, I mean, it's a 90-minute movie. I've given you literally 65 minutes of the movie. I'll leave the last 25 minutes for you to see.
True.
This is a fantastic movie.
Yes.
I loved yes. this movie. Now, I have a little bit of a qualm with you, my dear friend.
Okay.
Because of how I saw it. How I saw it.
Okay.
Do you want to hear this story? Or should we save it for later?
I mean, if you think it would...
Here's the deal.
If you think so, it would I was like, serve the podcast, yes. If not, we
okay,
can
move
on.
So America, I had, in parts unknown, I have jury duty. In fact, I'm when this podcast is done taping, I'm going to go back because they're still in the middle of jury selection. And that's all I'm allowed to tell you at the present moment. I have jury duty. And so I had this big hunk of time in the middle of the day, and I could have driven in somewhere and gotten lunch. And I was like, I'm already here. I don't want to drive. You know, it's like I got to go get my car out, park it again, blah, 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 drive around Santa Ana. I'm not interested. So I just walked into the jury selection. There's like a jury assembly room, like an area where we just
sure.
hang out and
assemble.
Be miserable together. Assemble. Yes. Mm-hmm. Like, not like the Avengers at all, actually. Like, whatever the opposite of that is. Like, nerds and losers assemble. Well, I have no job. So I went over to this corner in a laptop station, and I said, I'm going to watch American Werewolf in London. So I texted Andy and I was like, man, the internet is really slow here. I'm trying to stream Werewolf in London at the courthouse, and it is not doing a good job. And Andy texted me back, like, that's too bad. Good luck, buddy. What he should have texted me back is, maybe you shouldn't watch that movie in public, okay? Because here I am, by the way, sitting in my priestly garb, my clerical collar and my outfit, which hopefully will get me out of jury duty, and I mean, hopefully make me a more credible person to sit on a jury. I'll talk about that some other time.
And pursue the aims of justice in our
country. The funny thing is I went in there thinking like, God, I got to get out of this. And by the time I would left, I was like, you know, they should select me. I would be right for this jury.
I will tell you what I told you yesterday when you said that to me. All I can do is hope that the pendulum swings back to please get me out of jury duty.
Look, here's the deal. Like somebody's life, not life like life and death, but I mean someone's what happens, the future of someone's life. It's a criminal case. The future of someone's life hangs in the balance. And I care all of a sudden because I've been interjected into the situation for a day. And so I'm like, I really hope this is – and by the way, also it's guaranteed to be a short case. So it's only like a 5-day case. Fair. So I'm like, let's just do this thing. Give me in here.
Sure.
But anyways, so I sit down and start to watch this movie. First of all, there's scenes of intense gore.
Indeed.
Which are done really well in a way that didn't even bother – scared me without being like, oh, gosh.
Right. Yes.
Really well done gore.
Scary without being – to use the term that we've used before on this podcast, torture porn. Like it's not.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm trying to figure out if torture porn gives a worse name to torture or porn. I'm really not sure. It's like,
fair.
It's worse than both of those things for the soul.
And I agree with you. Yeah. I agree with you.
Okay. So, so not only is there incredible amounts of gore, then right in the midst of the movie, about 45 minutes in, just prolonged sex scene. To a Van Morrison song.
It's true.
And I was like, okay. And I'm like, and I'm sitting here like, I'm like, at this point, turn the computer so far away from everybody. And then I like, basically I just like minimize it and like listen, as long as I can hear the song, like clicking over to other things. Because I'm like, on any chance, even half a chance that anyone sees me watching a sex scene from a movie in my clerical collar in public at a jury duty thing, I am the worst person they know. Like it's that simple. So I'm like,
sure.
Turning the screen and like changing to something else. And I'm like, and you know me, the funny thing about me is I don't even like sex scenes in movies anyway. So I'm sitting here like, it's like I went and saw this movie with a parent. That's what it felt like, except a thousand times worse. I'm like trying to hide. Okay. So then the finale of the movie, the movie's finale takes place in an adult movie theater with sex scenes streaming and sex noises, grunting and stuff in the background.
Did you not have your earbuds? Were you listening?
No, I had my earbuds, but it's just, it's not like, okay, having earbuds wouldn't mean you'd watch an adult movie in public. Now I know this was an adult movie. It's a horror movie,
right?
But like, you'd still be like, oh God, I hope no one knows what's going on. And that's, even though it was just a horror movie, that's how I felt. I was like, I can't.
Fair. I just you made reference to the sounds, and I was wondering if you were actually listening.
No, but it just added to the like if my earbuds came unplugged miraculously, and someone was like,
right, yes,
what's going on over there? Yes. And it was also by that point like, oh, I can't take this anymore. Like there's two. And meanwhile, phenomenal movie. Loved the movie.
My response to that is this: that is terrible. And yet I'm so glad that happened to you because it's hilarious. And
what movie were you trying to watch?
I was just going to bring that up. We were, folks, when we were doing several months ago now, when we were doing Mutiny on the Bounty.
Hmm.
It was around Christmas time and I was in an airport because I was traveling back from seeing my family. And that movie... I mean, it takes place in Tahiti. Is that where they are?
Something like that.
Yeah, in a tropical island with natives, with aboriginal natives.
Which is a nice way of saying a bunch of hot naked chicks.
Honestly, it's like they had costumes and like the truck with the costumes exploded and they were like, well, we got to shoot it anyway.
Have you ever seen like those spoof movies or like R-rated comedies where like there'll be a dream sequence where they end up on an island where everyone's naked, but it's like totally ridiculously fake?
Yes.
That's actually how this movie was done. The Bounty was done for real though.
Yes.
And they weren't joking.
And I was surrounded. Again, this is Christmas time. So not only am I flying back from seeing my family, other families are flying back with tiny little children who are running around playing.
Right.
And I was like, oh my God, I'm going to be charged with like contributing to the delinquency of a minor.
Yep.
So yes. So I've been there and I'm sorry. I'm sorry that you experienced it as well.
I think I need to remember. And I think this is another thing with horror movies is horror movies have no problem showing gratuitous anything.
That's true.
And I think that's another problem I have with the genre of horror. Like overall, like the horror movies that I do like are much more restrained.
Yes.
And so I need to remember this the next time I'm in public, not to watch a horror movie because chances are it's going to be something. But this movie just was like, because it's a horror comedy, so I'm laughing, and then it's just like,
yes,
like boobies, death, murder, kill, grunting. No, stop! I'm trying to just watch this movie. So, anyways, but I got through it, and it was fantastic. Just a great movie. I loved every. I just loved every minute of it.
I'm so glad you liked it. The main character, played by David Naughton, who has not had a great career.
No.
He was cast. Do you know why he was cast in this movie?
Because he was in a Dr. Pepper commercial.
Yes, John Landis saw one of the most famous commercials of all time, an extended like minute-long song where if you've heard the phrase, I'm a pepper, or like, don't you want to be a pepper too?
Right.
And he is the guy that sings it. And you can YouTube, you can Google this and find it on YouTube. It is a weird freaking commercial. But there is this sense, like, I've spoken about this, you know, George C. Scott once said, you know, when he was asked, what are you looking for in you know, another actor's performance? How do you tell if another actor is good? And he said, I'm looking for the joy of performance, you know, and that's sort of what I'm looking for in movies. And it can mean a different thing. It means a different thing when you're watching an American Werewolf in London from when you're watching, you know, Remains of the Day. It just does. Yeah. But that doesn't mean it isn't there. And John Landis, if nothing else, is all about the joy of performance. I mean, he is really good at sort of drawing that out of whatever story he's telling. And so it is unsurprising to me that Griffin Dunne is in this movie and amazing. I think David Naughton is great. I think Jenny Agutter is fantastic and just unbelievably beautiful. Really.
Like when that's the nurse, by the way, and when this nurse is tending to him, I was like, this is like a fantasy movie. Like this is not. She's even wearing like the little nurse outfit with a little like buckle fastened in the center with so it comes in, and she's wearing a little nurse hat. She's got a little British accent, and she's like just like. And for some reason, I don't know what England in 1981 was like, but the doctor's like, you need to keep him company. And so her job is to sit with him and read to him and just be near him.
Mm-hmm.
And then at one point he wakes up from a fever dream, and just kisses her square on the lips, and she doesn't fight it. And I was like, this is the greatest nurse of all time.
She should win some sort of award.
Nurses everywhere. Pay attention to the way she... And then when he gets out of the hospital, she just takes him home.
She just takes him home. And and they have a conversation. She's like, there's only one bed. And she's like...
Yep. She basically is like... She's like, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not in the habit of doing this. And like you could see in his face...
Except
like,
I kind of am.
Like,
right.
Like his response is, well, I'm glad you decided to get in the habit now.
It's just...
And so that we are not, you know, just completely horny teenagers right now. It's also... As weird as the setup is, because you're absolutely right, they kiss after he wakes up from this fever dream. Part of his process of turning into a werewolf, sort of not on the night, but like he is now cursed, is he has these dreams. It's of him, you're running naked through the woods as a human, running naked through the woods and like killing and eating a deer and stuff like that. And he wakes up from one of these dreams and like it's like, I'm awake now, and now I'm kissing the nurse that is sitting next to me.
Right. No. Yeah, it works really well. It works really well within the context.
It is a believable relationship.
It is a believable relationship, but it is a fantastically fantastical relationship.
Yes, agreed.
It's like, okay. Just because of, like I said, like, when does that happen?
Yes. Yes. Those dreams. Let's talk about those dreams for a second, because there's this one where he is ostensibly
Nazi ghouls, basically?
Yes, right. He's ostensibly
stormtroopers?
Nazi undead stormtroopers
with ghoulish faces.
Yes. just, but they don't like eat his family. They shoot his family.
They come in, shoot his family and slit his throat.
And like torch the place. But like they couldn't, they didn't have to be like monsters. They could have just been Nazis because Nazis are humans and they just use human ways of killing people. Right.
It was ridiculous.
Yes.
And on top of that, it was legitimately creepy.
Yes.
Did a good job. But yes. I think what I loved about it was this movie is off the wall in a way that and inventive. And even that, like, it was, you could just, like, you said, the joy of filmmaking. Like, you get the sense that John Landis was like, all right, and then there'll be Nazi ghouls with guns. It's going to be amazing. And someone was like, what? And he's like, no, it's fine. I mean, like, right. And it was, like, it worked. But, you know, it is, anyways.
Mm-hmm.
I thoroughly enjoyed it. What else do we need? What do we need to say about this movie? As far as is it the height of the horror comedy genre? Evil Dead, this and Evil Dead 2, perhaps.
I mean,
you don't think Evil Dead 2 is scary?
Right. I would say that the three most successful horror comedies that I have ever seen are this, Evil Dead 2, and Shaun of the Dead.
Yes.
I think this is the one that is most successful at both. I don't think it's as good a movie as Shaun of the Dead. I don't think it's as funny as Shaun of the Dead, but it's not much less funny than Shaun of the Dead, and I think it is significantly scarier. While I do think there are significant scary moments in Shaun of the Dead, I think on the whole it works ever so slightly better as a comedy than a horror movie.
Well, and it has one distinct advantage over the other two movies.
Which is what?
Griffin Dunn. I'm just telling you.
Yeah.
Love Griffin Dunn.
Let's talk about that, because this movie won the very first Academy Award ever for makeup.
Yes, yes. And Griffin Dunn is one. I mean, the money shot is the transformation into a werewolf. I think people need to know that part of werewolf movies that I've seen, I know it happens in Monster Squad, which is probably my first werewolf movie.
Nice.
I know the Wolfman is famous for this. No, Teen Wolf was totally my first Wolfman movie.
Nice. Yeah, that's probably true for me too.
How they show that for some reason, maybe it's because there is a transformation, maybe because you're human one minute and something else the next minute.
Yeah.
Showing this transformation has always been really, really important. And it might just be because the Universal Wolfman did it. Yes. And so they were like, and that was the first one ever. And so they were like, we've got to live up to this. This is the part of it. So if you think about the zombie genre, the things that there need to happen in that, you know, there needs to be a moment when someone thinks someone's dead and they get bit, you know, or there needs to have someone who got bit and denies it.
Yes.
Like that's you, if you have a zombie movie where someone gets bit and doesn't deny it, you have failed at making a zombie movie. Did you get bit? No, I'm fine. You're hiding it.
Indeed.
Okay, if actually they say they're hiding and they actually are, you didn't do the zombie movie right. If you make a Wolfman movie and you don't show one person transforming, then you're in trouble. This movie is famous for its more than anything else, probably for the practical effect, which it won the very first Oscar for best makeup for Rick Baker, who's a genius. And the transformation is absolutely stunning. I mean, it's really well done and just cool looking. It's cool. Grotesque
it's gross without being like overly so.
You can watch it. You have to watch it. You're like, I have to see
it. It's mesmerizing. It's mesmerizing.
That's accurate. That's right.
And as far as like, I mean, it's not realistic, but if someone were to change from a man to a gigantic hound of hell, I can believe that that's what it would look like.
Now, I don't want to turn into one of these people, which I've already turned into to some degree. Like, I like records because I do like records. I don't know if analog's better than digital. I really don't. I know that I like records. I also listen to a ton of CDs, so I'm not going to say analog's better than digital. I'm not going to pretend that I know the difference. And I love digital when it comes to television, like movies, like Blu-ray, high def, all that stuff.
Amen. Yeah.
And I'm grateful, so grateful. I mean, like Gollum, come on.
Oh, yes.
Gollum is amazing, right? Yes. Gollum is amazing.
Yes.
I mean, Yoda worked so well and Jabba the Hutt worked so well as physical creatures that were made in their masks and whatever.
Puppets,
Puppets.
Yes.
Partially because of how limited in movement both of them were.
Agreed. I agree with that.
So Gollum, for instance, is an example of just a living, breathing, moving creature that looks amazing. But this, so I'm not going to, I'm not going to crap on, to use the scientific term. I'm not going to denigrate or crap on computer graphics.
Right.
Computer yes. work. That's silly.
They no question have their place. No question.
And there is
and
something
it's not a small place. It's a big
not at
place.
All. I mean, yes. It's changing the way we watch movies.
Agreed. Yes.
I don't believe it's just nostalgia that leads me to believe that there's something special about practical effects. I don't believe it's just nostalgia. And I think the most recent Evil Dead is a great example of that.
I agree.
And I think pools of blood, they don't look good. Even bright red fake blood, which is what, yes, we grew up on.
Yeah.
Maybe it wouldn't work for audiences today, but I still feel like seeing a physical amount of stuff gush from someone just is more believable than this sort of computer animated spurt.
You want to know what like my real next assignment for you for horror school is?
Please.
Don't watch the remake/sequel An American Werewolf in Paris.
Yeah. I had a feeling that wasn't going to be good.
It is terrible and
frankly, and computer animated.
That is like it has other issues, but you can overlook certain issues if the movie takes you along for the ride.
Yep.
And but you're absolutely right. I think it's really well said. Every werewolf movie, you need to see a transformation, and it just like it's completely computer generated, but it isn't well done.
Yeah,
so it's like watching a video game, and like not like a PS3 video game, like a Super Nintendo video game, and it's just like, oh well, all
right. Right.
I remember sitting in the theater and I was really excited to watch it because I loved the American Werewolf in London. I was like, oh, all right. You know.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'll tell you what, though. I'll tell you what. Limitation breeds creativity.
Yes.
Limitation breeds, with creative people anyway. When
right.
the going gets tough, the tough gets going, you know, and right. to use the oldest phrase ever. But like in the beginning was that phrase. But I feel like it's true when it comes to, you know, you and people who have huge budgets. Mm.
Yeah.
Like the funny thing, okay, like Titanic, okay, which is I'm now officially on board with what the official line on that movie. This is a fantastic movie to look at, and the plot and the line and the dialogue is terrible. Okay. I fit in that category. It is a spectacle.
Yes.
This was the most expensive movie ever made at the time, but it was cheap for what he actually accomplished.
I agree.
Like
with you.
It was expensive because he did something that was that expensive.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
Lord of the Rings, expensive when you think like as like the how much did they spend? I think for all three of them,
$450, I think.
When you think about the fact that they made three huge epic movies with the kind of graphics and the kind of work that they did, that is like
they got off cheap.
It's less than $150 million a movie.
Yeah.
For what today would easily be a $250 each. I mean that. So these movies are not breaking the bank. These are the ones that are special. I mean, you know, Jaws is the classic example. Everybody, if you're listening, you probably know this, right? There's a couple that may not, but I mean, they were going to bring out the shark way earlier in the movie.
Yeah.
But they didn't have the budget for it, and it kept breaking, and bad things happened, and filming on the ocean is terrible, and filming in New England in the summer is a terrible idea because there's no guarantee of the good weather. I mean, it's just the whole thing is, you know, and so they didn't end up bringing the shark out until the third act, and
it makes the movie. It's one of the two or three.
By the time it's revealed, you're like, oh, because you're already scared of this thing. You see little bits and pieces of it, but it's amazing in that sense. This movie, American Werewolf in London.
Yeah.
It doesn't have a huge budget.
No.
And it doesn't have the kind of effects that we have now.
Right.
But it works to its favor hugely. And Landis focuses on the characters.
Yes, and I think while as you say, the money shot, the central set piece of the entire movie is that first transformation. I think the best way to sort of illustrate the way that practical effects allows you in a way that no one except for Andy Serkis has been able to with computer generated characters, it allows you to focus on character is the character of Jack, is Griffin Dunne, as we've said, he appears to David several times David, is that his name?
I believe it is. Okay. I believe it is.
Right, because that's the actor's name too.
Right. They didn't. It was his, like, it wasn't his first movie, but it was very early on in his career, and they didn't want to make it any more difficult on him than they had
to. Nice. Just respond to your own name.
Right. It's like Tony on Who's the Boss. I was always convinced that they were like, and even because he was Tony on Taxi as well. And right. I feel like, so like, his name is character Rick. And for the first week of filming, they were like, Rick, and he would never turn around.
Right.
Tony, that's how I always envisioned Simpsons.
So anyway. The Simpsons thing where they're trying to put Homer in witness protection.
Hello, Mr. Thompson.
I think he's talking to you. Okay. So, you know, David's friend Jack, the one who was actually fully killed and who is condemned to walk, you know, as an undead spirit until the bloodline of the werewolf is severed. He appears to him three times throughout the course of the movie, three or four times, and each time he is more decomposed. And
it's really well done.
It is really well done, and it's both gross and, in the truest sense of the word, horrifying, because it's a horrifying image, but right. It's also hilarious.
Yeah.
Because
this movie is, the strength of this movie is irony.
Yes.
Okay. So one example would be what you're just talking about. They keep showing this guy who's mauled, just completely disgustingly broken up. And he's just like, hey, David, how's it going? Like, right. And they're just talking. Okay. It's just, right. That's brilliant.
Yes.
The change scene is just agonizingly painful and gross and transfixing, right? Like you're watching it going, oh my gosh. And the sound, the entire time, Sam Cooke's version of Blue Moon is playing in the background.
Yeah.
And it's really like, and if you know anything about Sam Cooke, it's like, Blue Moon.
That's right.
There's no one who can make happy sound as happy as Sam Cooke can.
That's true.
And so that's the second time John Landis has used Sam Cooke brilliantly in a movie. He used him in Animal House as well with Don't Know Much About History.
Right.
So John Landis has good taste in music, but it's used so that's a big part of this movie is irony. The way irony is used in this movie is just like, it's a great example of it.
When they're both human, both alive, right at the beginning of the movie, they're talking about this girl that they both know that Jack has a crush on, or crush. That's
oh her. Man,
yes, and so one of the first things that he says to David when he shows up is that girl that I liked, like, was so broken up at my funeral that he slept with like my main rival for her affection.
Right, right. Really, not fair. Really? But first he was so excited that she cried. That girl cried at my funeral. It's right. Fantastic. Right. Parents were there. It was great. Like the whole, you would have loved it. It was great.
Right. Let's briefly talk about the music, because all of the songs that are featured in any way have the word moon in the title.
Yeah, it's on the nose, but it's done really, really well.
That's precisely right. It's like, really? But it's done so well. And I mean,
well, it helps that they're good songs.
That's true. That's true. Several versions of Blue Moon are used.
Yeah.
He wanted to use more. Did you look up the trivia here on there's trivia, and so
he had Moondance for the Doin' It scene.
He had Moondance for the Doin' It scene, several versions of Blue Moon, Bad Moon Rising from CCR.
Genius.
He wanted to use Elvis Presley's version of Blue Moon, but he had just died, and or
the cost of that would have been
the estate was still tied up. So it was, I don't even know if it was the cost. It was like, it was just too much trouble.
It
was more trouble than it's worth. Also, Cat Stevens' song Moonshadow, he had recently converted to Islam and was like, I'm not licensing my secular songs anymore.
Right. I'm so glad he came back into licensing his music, because anyways.
For nothing else than the Rushmore soundtrack. Right.
Well, no, he got me through college in a big way. So
fair enough.
I appreciate that.
Sure.
But yeah.
And Bob Dylan, who converted to Christianity, apparently only briefly, but it was right. That was right then. And his version of Blue Moon, he was like, I don't want it to be used in an R-rated movie. So as many songs, there could have been three more.
I will talk to you for 4.5 hours about Bob Dylan's conversion to Christianity. I will. You have opened up a can of worms.
What I will say
very briefly, yes. Very, very, very briefly, is that it's not that he converted to Christianity, although he did. And no one really knows what he's into now, what he believes in now. Okay. He's gone back to being a total mystery.
Sure.
But when he converted to a very particular brand of evangelicalism that was very like he had, you know, I mean, it was like he was convicted to be like, I'm born again, I got to talk about it, and I can't do any of my old songs. He wrote all new stuff and only performed Christian material for about 3 or 4 years.
Huh.
And like, wouldn't perform any of his old stuff, wouldn't like, and so that doesn't shock me. Like, that doesn't surprise me at all. Like, would give sermons in the middle of his concerts, and people would boo him. Tried to make a documentary of it, almost bankrupted himself because no one would give him money to do it. Hmm. And there's some really good music in there. There's some stuff that's not as good. But anyways, so that doesn't surprise me. And by the way, his version of Blue Moon is not very good.
Well, then we dodged a bullet there.
No, we dodged a bullet.
So some other things I want to talk about. The original cast or the cast that the studio wanted for the David Naughton role, Dan Aykroyd. For the Griffin Dunne role, John Belushi. Now, I love both of those actors. They basically have me at hello. That would have been a terrible movie.
That would have been a terrible movie, and I don't love Dan Aykroyd. I like him. I like him in certain things. I think he's got a very particular thing. But
that's fair. I guess I haven't seen much of him when he isn't doing that at hello.
He has me when he does a good job.
I guess I haven't seen much where he hasn't been that doing that particular thing. Regardless. That would have been
a disaster.
Terrible. Interestingly.
How did that not work out? Was John Belushi too expensive at that point?
John Landis just said no. He's like, no, I'm not.
He said no. That's
yes,
good.
Yes.
Thank God.
This is something that I don't want to spend too long on. I just think it's fascinating. It is one of the only movies that I can think of where the characters are pretty clearly Jewish, and it's not about them being Jewish.
Wow.
Because
I have to think about that for a really long time.
Okay.
Because this is a movie about anti-Semitism in England. I never realized that.
No, it's not, folks. It isn't. But, you know, it's funny because two of the nurses, one of whom becomes his love, when he's still unconscious, but in the hospital in London, they say, you know, like they're talking about how cute he is. And one of them
says,
you know, I think he's Jewish. And the Jewish one who becomes his love says, how do you know? He's like, well, I checked, talking obviously about circumcision. And then a doctor overhears it and is like, don't you have something else to be doing? Anything? Right. What do we pay you for?
Right.
But
apparently you should be sitting next to someone's bedside reading them a book.
Right. But then the nurse who becomes his girlfriend, his love, says, well, that's just actually just the style over there that most people get circumcised. And
right.
having it's sort of a fake
which
out.
Which makes it okay for her, by the way.
Right. Totally. But I mean, the names, it's David Kessler, Jack Goodman, the girl that he's in love with is Debbie Klein. Like
Man, you are right on. And now I really have to, of course they're all played by Gentiles, but that's another thing.
Fair.
I mean, Griffin Dunne comes from a family of the most gentilic Gentiles that ever gentiled a Gentile. I mean, they are like the word goyim used to be Dunne.
That was actually there.
But it confused too many people, so they came up with another word. So they were like, do you mean Dunne like D-O-N-E? No, Dunne like D-U-N. It's totally – let's just call them Goyim. So anyways, I guess what I'm saying is I'm not kidding. Now I'm going to watch this movie as an allegory for anti-Semitism in England. Because ask our friend Jeremy Goldstein, who's, by the way, Jewish. He talks about the history of anti-Semitism in England. He's convinced that A Christmas Carol is the most anti-Semitic thing ever, even though Scrooge is not Jewish. He's like, but he is. Okay, so that's a whole other thing. My point is, sure. I am now going to be a conspiracy theorist who talks about how this movie is anti-Semitic. Sure. The movie's not anti-Semitic. The movie is an allegory for anti-Semitism.
Right.
I love it.
He's from Long Island. He went to NYU. I mean, it's just, and obviously I know plenty of people who are not Jewish who are from Long Island, and plenty of people who are not Jewish who went to NYU, but the stereotype of New York includes Jews.
Right. Right.
I thought that was interesting. I thought that was interesting.
I know plenty of people from Long Island who went to NYU who weren't Jewish. Mm. That's like me saying, I know plenty of people who went to Brandeis who weren't Jewish. No.
No.
I know plenty of people who took a pilgrimage to Jerusalem when they were 13 that were not Jew. No, I don't. That's not true. It's not accurate at all.
Last thing I'll say about the music. You did the score for this movie? Elmer Bernstein.
Yeah.
You know how long the score is? Like 7 minutes long. Because it's so much about like the popular music.
He's like, am I done? Okay, I'm done.
Da, 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 and we're done.
And we're done. I wrote that. $1,000, please. Give it
right.
to me. Right in my pocket.
Can
you make that out to cash?
The last thing I'll say about the movie is this. Apparently, the final look of the werewolf is based on Rick Baker, the makeup guy's dog.
I have to tell you something.
That's terrifying.
I don't ever want to meet
his dog. Go for it.
Because it looked much more like a dog than a wolf.
That's true. That is true.
And I have a dog who looks nothing like this werewolf.
Sure.
And I came home last night. It was dark. And I opened up the sliding door. This is the second horror movie in a row where I've come home last night at night after seeing a movie and it was dark. And I put up the sliding door and my dog's in the hallway. But this time when I opened up the door and my dog looked at me and there was a split second where I was like, oh. Like, fair. The movie has done its job because yes. I will never look at my loving pooch who has never so much as growled at me. I will never look at him the same way again.
Indeed.
He's a big boy. He could take me down if he wanted to. I'm sure. glad he doesn't know that.
Yes. Actually, the last thing I'll say about the movie is this. This movie got John Landis the job of directing the music video for Thriller. So,
well done.
You know
Makes
what?
Perfect sense.
Perfect sense. It's that music video is funny. It's scary. It's atmospheric. It's character-based? Totally. Big fan.
By the way, John Landis, your boy Ebert did not like American Werewolf in London.
I know.
Thumbs down. He also gave Three Amigos 1 star. Unacceptable. I'm not even going to read the review for that.
Fair.
But John Landis' directing career has been spotty at best.
It's fair. No, you're right.
So what's my next assignment, Andy Roth?
Your next assignment.
Oh, God.
It's time for you to experience the grandfather of the slasher genre, John Carpenter's Halloween.
Halloween. Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. It's going to be fine. We're going to talk about it. It's going to be good. It also has some fun music. It's not as fun. It's more fun because it's really.
I know the music. I know it.
Scary and terrifying and less, you know, bomb, 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 bomb.
Is this the movie that started?
Nope.
Oh, that's Friday the 13th.
Yes, that's Friday the 13th.
Okay. I've never seen any of those movies either. I saw Friday the 13th 8, Jason Goes to Manhattan, but that's another story.
The theme for Halloween is basically Carpenter, and I'm not saying this in a bad way, pounding on like one note and then like another note real quick and then back to the first note, and it's terrifying.
I know the theme.
Oh, right, but that's Friday the 13th.
No, but I know the theme. Yeah.
Okay,
so, I'm ready for it. Jamie Lee Curtis.
Yeah, you're gonna be great. All right. So basically, guys, to sum up the TLDR, too long didn't read, of this entire podcast, see American Werewolf in London. It's just awesome.
And then tune in tomorrow for our Project Melway, which we have a big surprise for you, and it's going to be fantastic.
It's very exciting.
Actually, and then our Thursday, we've just decided what we're going to do for our Thursday long form, which is ill-named since everything we do is long form at this point.
Everything we do is long. It's true.
But our Thursday is going to be very special.
Yes.
But our Thursday is going to be very special. And then Mailbag is coming up soon. It's an exciting time to be us.
You know what? We're special is what we're saying. We're pretty special.
What I'm saying is, I was trying to say it's an exciting time to be us, but what I think I really mean is it's an exciting time to be you guys.
Indeed. Indeed. But you know what, guys? See American Werewolf in London. Tune in tomorrow for Project Melway because it's something special, and so is the rest of the week. And until the next installment of Horror School, class is dismissed.
Oh, thank you, teacher.
I'm Andy Roth, and that's Phil Duvall. We'll see you again soon. Bye-bye.
Bye now.
The most important meal of the day.